Chapter 9. Running its brick arches along the garden side of the house. It was really a magnificent garden. Smooth green lawns and a gorgeous maze of flower beds in the foreground, displayed around a basin of dark water framed in a marble rim, and in the distance the massed foliage of varied trees concealing the roofs of other houses. The town might have been miles away. It was a brilliantly colored solitude, drowsing in a warm, voluptuous silence, where the long, still shadows fell across the beds, and in shady nooks, the massed colors of the flowers had an extraordinary magnificence of effect. I stood entranced. Jacobus grasped me delicately above the elbow, impelling me to a half turn to the left. I had not noticed the girl before. She occupied a low, deep, wickerwork armchair, and I saw her in exact profile like a figure in a tapestry, and as motionless. Jacobus released my arm. "This is Alice," he announced tranquilly, and his subdued manner of speaking made it sound so much like a confidential communication that I fancied myself nodding understandingly and whispering, "See, I see." Of course, I did nothing of the kind. Neither of us did anything. We stood side by side looking down at the girl. For quite a time she did not stir, staring straight before her, as if watching the vision of some pageant passing through the garden in the deep, rich glow of light and the splendor of flowers. Then, coming to the end of her reverie, she looked round and up. If I had not at first noticed her, I am certain that she too had been unaware of my presence till she actually perceived me by her father's side. The quick and upward movement of the heavy eyelids, the widening of the languid glance, passing into a fixed stare, put that beyond doubt. Under her amazement there was a hint of fear, and then came a flash as of anger. Jacobus, after uttering my name fairly loud, said, "Make yourself at home, Captain, I won't be gone long," and went away rapidly. Before I had time to make a bow, I was left alone with the girl who, I remembered suddenly, had not been seen by any man or woman of that town since he had found it necessary to put up her hair. It looked as though it had not been touched again since that distant time of first putting up. It was a mass of black, lustrous locks, twisted anyhow high on her head, with long, untidy wisps hanging down on each side of the clear sallow face. A mass so thick and strong and abundant that, nothing but to look at, it gave you a sensation of heavy pressure on the top of your head, and an impression of magnificently cynical untidiness. She leaned forward, hugging herself with crossed legs. A dingy, amber-colored, flounced wrapper of some thin stuff revealed the young supple body drawn together tensely in the deep low seat, as if crouching for a spring. I detected a slight, quivering start or two, which looked uncommonly like bounding away. They were followed by the most absolute immobility. The absurd impulse to run out after Jacobus, for I had been startled, to, once repressed, I took a chair, placed it not very far from her, sat down deliberately, and began to talk about the garden, caring not what I said, but using a gentle caressing intonation as one talks to soothe a startled wild animal. I could not even be certain that she understood me. She never raised her face nor attempted to look my way. I kept on talking, only to prevent her from taking flight. As he had another of those quivering, repressed starts which made me catch my breath with apprehension. Ultimately I formed a notion that what prevented her perhaps from going off in one great, nervous leap was the scantiness of her attire. The wicker armchair was the most substantial thing about her person. What else he had on under that dingy, loose, amber wrapper must have been of the most flimsy and airy character. One could not help being aware of it. It was obvious. I felt it actually embarrassing at first. But that sort of embarrassment is got over easily by a mind not enslaved by narrow prejudices. I did not avert my gaze from Alice. I went on talking with ingratiating softness, the recollection that, most likely, as he had never before been spoken to by a strange man adding to my assurance. I don't know why an emotional tenseness should have crept into the situation. But it did. And just as I was becoming aware of it, a slight scream cut short my flow of urbane speech. The scream did not proceed from the girl. It was emitted behind me, and caused me to turn my head sharply. I understood at once that the apparition in the doorway was the elderly relation of Jacobus, the companion, the governant. While she remained thunderstruck, I got up and made her a low bow. The ladies of Jacobus's household evidently spent their days in light attire. This stumpy old woman with a face like a large wrinkled lemon, beady eyes, and a shock of iron gray hair, was dressed in a garment of some ash-colored, silky, light stuff. It fell from her thick neck down to her toes with the simplicity of an unadorned nightgown. It made her appear truly cylindrical. She exclaimed, "How did you get here?" Before I could say a word, she vanished, and presently I heard a confusion of shrill protestations in a distant part of the house. Obviously, no one could tell her how I got there. In a moment, with great outcries from two Negro women following her, she waddled back to the doorway, infuriated. "What do you want here?" I turned to the girl. She was sitting straight up now, her hands posed on the arms of the chair. I appealed to her. "Surely, Miss Alice, you will not let them drive me out into the street?" Her magnificent black eyes, narrowed, long in shape, swept over me with an indefinable expression. Then in a harsh, contemptuous voice she let fall in French a sort of explanation. "Qu'est-ce, Papa?" I made another low bow to the old woman. She turned her back on me in order to drive away her black henchwomen, then surveying my person in a peculiar manner with one small eye nearly closed and her face all drawn up on that side, as if with a twinge of toothache, she stepped out on the veranda, sat down in a rocking chair some distance away, and took up her knitting from a little table. Before she started at it, she plunged one of the needles into the mop of her gray hair, and stirred it vigorously. Her elementary nightgown sort of frock clung to her ancient, stumpy, and floating form. She wore white cotton stockings and flat brown velvet slippers. Her feet and ankles were obtrusively visible on the footrest. She began to rock herself slightly, while she knitted. I had resumed my seat and kept quiet, for I mistrusted that old woman. What if she ordered me to depart? She seemed capable of any outrage. As he had snorted once or twice, she was knitting violently. Suddenly she piped at the young girl in French a question which I translate colloquially. "What's your father up to now?" The young creature shrugged her shoulders so comprehensively that her whole body swayed within the loose wrapper, and in that unexpectedly harsh voice which yet had a seductive quality to the senses, like certain kinds of natural rough wines one drinks with pleasure. "It's some captain. Leave me alone, will you?" The chair rocked quicker. The old, thin voice was like a whistle. "You and your father make a pair. He would stick at nothing that's well known. But I didn't expect this. I thought it high time to air some of my own French." I remarked modestly, but firmly, that this was business. I had some matters to talk over with Mr. Jacobus. At once she piped out a derisive "Ur innocent." Then, with a change of tone, "He shops for business. Why don't you go to the shop to talk with him?" The furious speed of her fingers and knitting needles made one dizzy, and with squeaky indignation. "Sitting here staring at that girl, is that what you call business?" "No," I said suavely. "Call this pleasure an unexpected pleasure. And unless Miss Alice objects, I half turned to her. She flung at me an angry and contemptuous "Don't care," and leaning her elbow on her knees took her chin in her hand, a Jacobus chin undoubtedly. And those heavy eyelids, this black irritated stare reminded me of Jacobus, to the wealthy merchant, the respected one. The design of her eyebrows also was the same, rigid and ill-omened. Yes. I traced in her a resemblance to both of them. It came to me as a sort of surprising remote inference that both these Jacobuses were rather handsome men after all. I said, Oh. Then I shall stare at you till you smile. She favored me again with an even more viciously scornful uncare. The old woman broke in blunt and shrill. Here is impudence. And you too. Don't care. Go at least and put some more clothes on. Sitting there like this before this sailor riffraff. The sun was about to leave the pearl of the ocean for other seas, for other lands. The walled garden full of shadows blazed with color, as if the flowers were giving up the light absorbed during the day. The amazing old woman became very explicit. She suggested to the girl a corset, and a petticoat with a cynical unreserve which humiliated me. Was I of no more account than a wooden dummy? The girl snapped out. Hand. It was not the naughty retort of a vulgar child. It had a note of desperation. Clearly my intrusion had somehow upset the balance of their established relations. The old woman knitted with furious accuracy, her eyes fastened down on her work. Oh, you are the true child of your father. And that talks of entering a convent. Letting herself be stared at by a fellow. Leave off. Shameless thing. Old sorceress, the girl uttered distinctly, preserving her meditative pose, chin in hand, and a faraway stare over the garden. It was like the quarrel of the kettle and the pot. The old woman flew out of the chair, banged down her work, and with a great play of thick limb perfectly visible in that weird, clinging garment of hers, strode at the girl who never stirred. I was experiencing a sort of trepidation when, as if awed by that unconscious attitude, the aged relative of Jacobus turned short upon me. She was, I perceived, armed with a knitting needle, and as she raised her hand her intention seemed to be, to throw it at me like a dart. But she only used it to scratch her head with, examining me the while at close range, one eye nearly shut and her face distorted by a whimsical, one-sided grimace. My dear man, she asked abruptly, do you expect any good to come of this? Do hope so indeed, Miss Jacobus. I tried to speak in the easy tone of an afternoon caller. You see, I am here after some backs. Backs. Look at that now. Didn't I hear you holding forth to that graceless wretch? You would like to see me in my grave, uttered the motionless girl hoarsely. Grave? What about me? Buried alive before I am dead for the sake of a thing blessed with such a pretty father, she cried, and turning to me. Who are one of these men he does business with? Well, why don't you leave us in peace, my good fellow? It was said in a tone this, leave us in peace. There was a sort of ruffianly familiarity, a superiority, a scorn in it. I was to hear it more than once, for you would show an imperfect knowledge of human nature, if you thought that this was my last visit to that house, where no respectable person had put foot for ever so many years. No, you would be very much mistaken, if you imagined that this reception had scared me away. First of all, I was not going to run before a grotesque and ruffianly old woman. And then you mustn't forget these necessary backs. That first evening Jacobus made me stay to dinner, after, however, telling me loyally that he didn't know whether he could do anything at all for me. He had been thinking it over. It was too difficult, he feared. But he did not give it up in so many words. We were only three at table. The girl by means of repeated aunt, shan't, and aunt care, having conveyed and affirmed her intention, not to come to the table, not to have any dinner, not to move from the veranda. The old relative hopped about in her flat slippers and piped indignantly. Jacobus towered over her, and murmured placidly in his throat. I joined jocularly from a distance, throwing in a few words, for which under the cover of the night I received secretly a most vicious poke in the ribs from the old woman's elbow or perhaps her fist. I restrained a cry, and all the time the girl didn't even condescend to raise her head, to look at any of us. All this may sound childish, and yet that stony, petulant sullenness had an obscurely tragic flavor. And so we sat down to the food around the light of a good many candles, while she remained crouching out there, staring in the dark, as if feeding her bad temper on the heavily scented air of the admirable garden. Before leaving, I said to Jacobus that I would come next day to hear if the bag affair had made any progress. He shook his head slightly at that. I'll haunt your house daily till you pull it off. You'll be always finding me here. His faint, melancholy smile did not part his thick lips. That will be all right, Captain. Then seeing me to the door, very tranquil, he murmured earnestly the recommendation. Make yourself at home, and also the hospitable hint about there being always plate of soup. It was only on my way to the quay, down the ill-lighted streets, that I remembered I had been engaged to dine that very evening with the S family. Though vexed with my forgetfulness, it would be rather awkward to explain, I couldn't help thinking that it had procured me a more amusing evening. And besides business. The sacred business. In a barefooted Negro who overtook me at a run, and bolted down the landing steps, I recognized Jacobus's boatman, who must have been feeding in the kitchen. His usual good night, sah. As I went up my ship's ladder had a more cordial sound than on previous occasions. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.